most companies, great companies, are trying to figure out what does truly 21st century leadership look like? Yeah. And it isn't what it used to be.
Today's guest was really, really fun. Tony Bond is one of these people that I feel like everyone should know who he is.
I loved this episode.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have him on so many more times because Tony, here's why I'm excited to have Tony on. He is a very fascinating person himself, but he also sits in a seat in his job, in his role, where he gets a view on work and life and work life that none of us get. So he is the Chief Innovation Officer of Great Places to Work, a fascinating company we can talk more about. Because of that role, he sits and hangs out and goes to meetings with the CEOs of every company on earth, like you name it, and he's sat with them and heard their perspective and seen their struggles. So he's got that point of view, but also they gather data from employees at thousands of companies and their experience of work and like where the world is headed.
Because you're saying they had like, what, 40, 50 years of data now?
Yeah, and that's what makes them unique because people are probably always mix it up in their head. Like you've got Forbes has a list of the best companies to work for, and you have some of these other popular lists, but Great Places to Work is a company, and they have lists, and they do a lot of other cool things with the data.
Fortune uses their list, right? Is that what it is?
This is part of what's fascinating because, and Tony has a lot more to say on it, but basically, they have reinvented the way they use the data and the way the rankings happen because they were kind of biased in the past. Mm-hmm. And now, like, I think that's the unique thing that Great Places to Work does is they look at the data in a better way that's not only surveying certain types of people. It's like it's hearing a diversity of people and hearing things equally and then really bubbling up like, but where do people like working? Not just like what company, you know.
Wait, you mean you can ask questions that are misleading and get right. The answer you want from them?
I know. What? Or like companies paying to get on a list because that never happens.
Who knew?
Yeah. So I think what's interesting about your question is you might think because of Fortune 100 list, it's like, oh, like Google and places like this that we all know. But actually, often it's surprising the companies that are best places to work. I don't know who the current top ones are. I think there was one that was like Cisco or someplace.
Cisco's two.
Oh, I was close.
You were close.
Okay. Who's number one?
It's a big, big company. Uh-huh. You see them a lot of places.
Okay.
A lot of exits have them on the interstate. Hospitality.
I want to guess, but I'm not sure.
Hilton.
Oh, Hilton. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Then NVIDIA, is that how you say it?
Oh, yes. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Amex for Synchrony.
Synchrony Bank. But there's also, other types of lists. So they have the main list, Great Places to Work, best for different categories.
Ooh, let's check out best workplaces in technology.
Yeah.
One's obviously Cisco.
Uh-huh. What's two and three?
Two is NVIDIA. Then
Atlassian.
Yep, you said it way better.
Well, you know, Trello was purchased by them.
Oh, I did not know that. But is Voxer?
Probably, because they're awesome.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just a fascinating. And then they do so much stuff behind the scenes where they're using that data to help influence and guide and shape the future of work. And so anyway, Tony's got just this really cool perspective. And he's, I don't know if he would call himself. I think he's kind of an adventurer and a very curious person. He's into music. He played college athletics. Like he just, I don't know. He's got this mixed, really interesting view on things.
Yeah, I loved everything he said. I wish we could have had 5 hours with him, honestly.
I know. It was fun. We will have him back on. And I think we can deep dive into some of the things he touches on, like where the future of work is headed, what the foremost, like, C-suite leaders of companies in the world are thinking about and worried about where, like, how he structures his day and thinking more creatively about how you organize your time, all of these things that I think we kind of touched on, but we could dig deeper.
Yeah, we never got into much. What position did you play in basketball?
Hmm. Actually, basketball is my second favorite sport. Football is my favorite sport. And so I was a wideout receiver, and then I was hit by a car on a bike. My junior year, summer of my junior year, and I injured my neck. So the whole idea of playing football was over with. But I was a shooting guard in high school and a point, kind of a combo guard in college.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then our son was, he's better than me. He was, he's like 6'5", pushing 6'6", but he was a point guard pretty much his whole life.
Which was great. It's funny to me thinking back in high school, our tallest guy who was like the basketball star was 6'1", and that
seemed like such a tall guy.
Yeah.
Now 6'1", you don't even make the bench.
No. Our daughter's like 6'2".
Yeah. We, this weekend, we're going to go to my dad and I to the March Madness first round.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of our new tradition because we did it last year and we realized, hey, not only are the tickets more affordable, mm-hmm. but you get these really exciting upsets. And we happened to be at the FAU. Like, we saw Purdue go down with Zach Edey, who, that was crazy to see someone so big and so tall.
Yeah.
But he was just kind of off his game that day and just missing a lot. And to see FAU just draining threes, I forget.
Yeah.
It was crazy. They had such a high percentage of threes that they made in that game. So anyway, we love the idea. We're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. How many years have you been doing that?
This will just be the second.
Second year. Yeah.
But I think I just always had it in my head. I love March Madness, but I thought it had to be like the Final Four that you go to, which is so hard to get good tickets. So like, no, actually round one is really fun. you never know what you're going to get.
I'm not going to a game since our son left. He was at Davidson College his first 2 years. And they made it to the Elite Eight. And it was in Detroit. Mm-hmm. That was my last real NCAA tournament game.
That'd be exciting, though, to have a stake in it. You actually have someone in the game.
It was funny. I don't know where it was. There was a documentary on Steph Curry. Did you see it?
Mm-mm.
But anyway, they were showing the tournaments, and they were showing all the games. And people started sending me a clip of like a snapshot of video. I'm like standing up, cheering like crazy.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But it was crazy because I wasn't sure who I was cheering for. They were playing Georgetown at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And our son, we know a lot of the kids from Georgetown. And he went to high school with Roy Hibbert, who was a big guy. But Davidson upset Georgetown. And I'm not sure who I was cheering for when I was standing up. Because I knew all the Georgetown kids.
That's why you're ignoring the clip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, okay. So give a snapshot of your career progression, because it's kind of interesting when we met recently and we were talking about some of the role and influence of sports that you're actually coming back to a bit in your career, but you've reinvented yourself along the way. Mm-hmm. That really resonates and is helpful for the listeners of this podcast, because everyone's in that right now.
Yeah.
Or thinking about a shift or trying to figure out, a lot of like generalists who don't quite know where they fit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what has been your path?
My path, I was kind of a liberal arts, more psychology in undergrad, but I took a lot of business courses. And so I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, because I thought, I'm going to be an athlete and I'm going to make money.
Yeah.
And I don't have to worry about all the other stuff. That didn't happen. And so I had someone that I knew who was working in the finance industry, and I started working there. And it was a great career. I learned a lot. I was developed a lot. Spent some time in the sales and marketing area. Accumulated all of these security licenses, Series 6, Series 7.
And, so useful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really useful. And then, so I did that for a long period of time, and it was great. Financially, it was great. I learned a lot, but it was never really who I was. It wasn't my passion. And so I ended up leaving, and at the time I had been coached. You'll love this conversation.
Yeah.
So I had a coach, and I'm like, how do you do what you do? And
a professional, like a career coach?
Yeah, like an executive career coach.
You were ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and so he explained coaching, and I went to the Coaching Training Institute, and I got certified to be a coach, and I did all this stuff. And it was like a transitional period. And so I left the finance area, and it was during 2009, the recession.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine what the job market was like during that time.
Yeah.
So I didn't really do anything for about a year. And then I went back to school to get a graduate degree in organizational behavior.
Yeah.
And I had gone to Syracuse for an MBA. And so it was during that study, I wasn't even sure what I wanted to do with it, but I discovered that a big part of the program was in sustainability.
Uh-huh.
And a big part of the program was about leadership. So that opened my eyes. When I left there, I started doing some work in the sustainability world with a professor who was at Case Western. And that was a great career, and it wasn't that long. And then I realized, who's doing this work when it comes to human beings, the human side of sustainability? And my past just connected with Great Place to Work. Uh-huh. And so that's when I joined Great Place to Work about 12 years ago. So I've gone from wanting to be a psychologist to working in the finance industry to doing sustainability consulting work to now what I'm doing at Great Place to Work.
That's so cool. But it's funny how even though I have a similar windy path, mm-hmm. it's like every time I hear it, it seems, I don't know, somehow new and fresh. Like when you were, do you feel like when you say it now, it's more clear than when you were in those moments?
It's more clear now. I can see how things were building, but at the time it seemed a little dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. I was like bouncing all over the place. And I came to this critical point. It was during the recession. I needed to make money after not working for a while. I had all these security licenses, and I'm like, do I go back into the finance? Do I do this work?
Yeah.
And then I almost said, I need to burn the bridge. I need to let all these things go. And like, then there's no way to go back.
But how'd you get to that point? How did you feel confident in doing that?
Yeah. It was like my intuition, because I did start to interview with some jobs similar to what I had left. It just didn't feel right. I'm mm-hmm. like, this doesn't feel right inside. I just can't do it. I'm meant to do something else.
Did you have people in your life affirming that same thing?
My wife, Tammy's been a big part of it. Mm-hmm. She knows me better than anyone else. But I did. Each time that I've made the transition, I felt like I needed to create a new network of people who don't know me from the past. Mm-hmm. Because people who have known me for a long time are sort of invested in me staying the way that I was.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of create this network, my own board of directors during each transition. So I had people who were speaking into my life, my decisions.
Did you have any of that insecurity around, it's almost like an imposter syndrome where you see the through line, like you are the same person through all of that. And there are reasons why the switches made sense, right. But other people from the outside get confused.
Yeah.
Well, wait, I thought you were that. Now you're this.
Yeah. Was like confused. Some of the people I knew really well, it was almost like they were on the sidelines watching. Uh-huh. Is this really going to work for him? What's going to happen to him?
Like he's lost his way.
He's lost his mind. Yeah.
He'll get back to the financial, he'll get back to his certifications. Exactly. Just give him time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't get a lot of support but it was okay. But I found that it's this new group of people who don't really have a vested interest in either way, mm-hmm. how it turns out. They were a lot of value.
How would you name the through lines? What are the common threads for you, like through all those different roles that made you?
Yeah, the common thread was to be a lifelong, life-wide learner. I was always trying to learn. I was curious. Mm-hmm. And I was learning a lot about myself. I did some crazy things, like I went on retreats in the desert, kind of vision quest things. So I was learning more and more about myself along the way. That I think that was one key through line. And then I was also curious, and I was trying things. I tried it to, maybe it's more wayfinding. I didn't really have a plan. I was just meeting people, following wherever that thread took me. Mm-hmm. And it normally took me in the right direction.
We met through Ashley, who came on the podcast recently, and we were talking about that. That was a theme for her too, being a learner, and she loves learning about people and learning about herself. Uh-huh. And I actually thought a lot about that afterward, because I'm similar, and yet I still feel like it's somehow not a legitimate skill or career path to be a learner. Like, you have to learn in school. Everyone learns. Like, that's not a thing. That's not a skill.
Right.
I'm curious what you think about it, because I'm starting to see it differently. No, it is actually, I think it's more of a skill than I give it credit for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More of a legitimate like career pillar.
Right. I think it is. I'm always like, I'm present to the moment. I'm trying to do the best that I can in the moment, but I always have an eye towards the future. Mm-hmm. And what does the future look like? And what should I be learning and getting exposed to that's going to help me down the road? And then I've also had a coach, like from the time that I was six, playing sports, I've always had a coach and I value coaches. And so even when I wasn't in the place where I wanted to be, I was being coached. I had a personal coach, life coach, leadership coach. Yeah.
What have you found valuable about having coaches in your life?
That's where the confidence comes. It's like, I have the answer. The coaches approach it that way. Mm-hmm. You know what you need to do. So it's just like, you need to be asked the right questions. Yes. You need to reflect things back to you.
Yeah.
And so I always had this, you know, self-advocacy and feel like I could get things done through conversations with coaches.
I also always have multiple coaches in my life, and I definitely believe in practice what you preach, but I haven't had a good kind of leadership career coach recently. Mm-hmm. I was having a conversation with someone I really respect and has always been a helpful friend. And I just found myself venting to her for kind of like 20 minutes straight. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of, she had that little smirk on her face that she knew what was going on, but she was just sitting there quiet. And then at the end, I was like, so what should I do about that? And she goes, sounds like you know. Mm-hmm. And I was like, damn it. Yes, I do know. And so it was funny because we ended the conversation. I said, can I hire you to be my coach? Because, and we're actually starting next week.
Yeah.
Because she had that, she gave me exactly what I needed, which was someone to just point out what I already knew, mm-hmm. but like put the boldness in me to just do it.
Yeah.
She was like, you need to do it today, is what she said. And I was like, okay, all right, that's what I needed.
That was awesome. I also had an older brother. You know, our dad died when I was young, and my oldest brother, who unfortunately passed away 2 years ago, but he became somewhat like my father. And I would have these challenges. Maybe kids were bullying me on the playground or things weren't working my way, and I would express that to him, and he would always say, what are you going to do about it? And he would just keep asking me, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
So I would always leave thinking, I got to figure this out on my own. So he kind of reinforced that. But yeah, it's been, I think, I don't know where I would be without having a coach at critical moments in my life. And then also just a network of people. I don't feel like I've done anything on my own. It's always been, you know, I've had this network that helped me.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting to me. I hadn't thought about that part of what you do, that you aren't a coach per se, but that probably weaves into your role a lot in terms of helping leaders and organizations navigate the future. And what do you find? I mean, you have a unique role in that you see a broad spectrum of what leaders and companies are struggling with and thinking about and asking about. I'm just curious, like what are the big topics right now, or where do you think organizations are headed?
Yeah.
Because it feels to me like the whole world of work is fundamentally shifting right now. Mm-hmm. It's like the history books are going to talk about this moment.
Yeah.
That we had a certain way that work happened and now it's totally changing, but we don't know what, it's all in flux. So we're all speculating.
Yeah.
I'm curious your thoughts.
There's so much that's going on. I think I'll start with, work really hadn't changed since the Industrial Revolution, like the hierarchy within work, the 9-to-5 schedule. So it really hadn't changed, but it needed to change. And I think the pandemic almost forced that change and to rethink work. So fast forward to today, people are still trying to figure out, what does work look like? Hybrid, in office. And our research shows that when people are giving a choice, they're 3 times more likely to want to stay in their organization. And so the mandate doesn't work. You have a really good reason for people to come back. So what's happening today, people are still trying to figure out, what does work look like? Mm-hmm. I think the pandemic also made us look at the value of time in a different way. And so the hybrid and back to the office thing is still a big topic. Leadership is a big topic because most companies, great companies, are trying to figure out, what does truly 21st century leadership look like?
Yeah.
And it isn't what it used to be.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of work being done on helping their leaders show up in a different way. And I would also say the technology that's coming our way, and AI is a big conversation with most of these great companies. And AI is just not a tool, but it's kind of creating an environment where we work within it. Mm-hmm. And so how do we make sure that the humans be the best humans they can be? And a lot of that falls on leadership. So those are three really big areas. And then also probably the last one is How do you create an atmosphere where everyone feels included? Everyone feels like they can contribute.
Yeah.
So those things are top of mind, I would say, of every executive every day.
Yeah. Well, and you made an interesting comment that because you guys have evolved and improved the way you do your research and data collection, that you're starting to hear more from a more diverse population of the employees. Like, what is it that they want?
Yeah.
The insights may have been skewed in the past because of the way that that data was collected.
Yeah. Yeah. And we survey 18,000 companies every year, 20 million employees globally. So there's a lot of data we've been collecting for a long period of time. If I go back to leadership, one of the things they're looking for is a leader that's more of a coach, a collaborator, a connector. Years ago, it was more of a beacon, someone who had all the answers. And so people are looking for leaders to show up in a different way. People are also looking for the opportunity to feel cared for, like this well-being and all of that stuff in the workplace is really, really big. So I want to be the best that I can be. I want to bring all of who I am to work. So people are looking for that. They're looking for development, personal growth. That's a big thing. So I don't know if it's changed a lot, but I think people are placing a bigger value on those things since the pandemic.
What do you personally think are going to be some of the biggest changes in how it all works? Like if you fast forward 20 years, do you have any perspectives on what you think it's going to look like?
I was talking to someone I know at Meta and they were referencing, you know, as a leader, I can create my team with people and with AI. So I have bots and people working together. And it's like, how do I make sure that humans are trusting my AI colleague? And so I think the whole makeup of what the workplace is going to look like is going to be totally different going forward. I also believe that I'll double down on a leadership thing. We're looking for new behaviors from leaders, but it almost feels like we have to, the person has to change along with all of this. And so I think leadership development and how that looks is going to change going forward.
I've always been a fan. I think I mentioned this to you, companies like Zingerman's out of Detroit. I was just talking to, it slips my mind, it'll come back, a company that had a similar approach where they actually try to help their employees find their purpose and their passions and like really truly invest time, money, coaching, energy, like into helping them bring their interests and dreams to life.
Yeah.
And it feels like an old company mindset is fearful of that. Well, then they're going to leave. They're going to leave us, which is a very controlling, like keep everyone in mindset.
Right.
And these companies have proven, I mean, they've been doing, places like Zingerman's has been doing this for decades. They invest in those people. And yes, maybe those people do decide to do something else and leave. But A, guess what? They were probably going to leave anyway. People change jobs often these days. But B, now that person is a huge raving fan about the brand. And so it's like this talent brand out there saying like, well, Zingerman's is amazing.
Yeah.
They really helped me get where I want to go. I love that company.
Right.
Versus I think what's more common, people leave in usually a negative fashion and then have bad things to say.
Yeah, you don't want to work there.
Yeah.
And that message spreads to a lot of people.
I agree about the person needing to shift. It's like that type of a change feels like a fundamental shift in how a leader shows up, how they view like their job and what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That feels really risky, but I've already seen many examples of where it really wins out to be on the employee's side as a person.
I think so. Yeah. So that's so true. And it's talent acquisition. You mentioned what else is changing. I think that's a big challenge that people have. But I think most companies create their own resource deficit when it comes to talent. So probably with AI, it's going to make it easier for companies to see adjacent skills. Like you haven't worked in this area, but you've been working over here, but we were able to map the skills and see how they're very similar.
Yeah.
So it should create more opportunities for people to move throughout the organization into different roles.
Wait, say more about they create their own resource deficit. What do you mean?
By the way that you look for talent. Did you go to these schools? Do you have this degree?
Uh-huh.
Have you worked in this area before? And I think we just sort of narrow our opportunities to bring people in the more that we use those things.
Yeah.
So I think the way we find talent and develop talent is probably going to change quite a bit.
Yeah. Do you think it'll continue in this direction of gig economy isn't the right word anymore because I think everyone thinks Uber and Lyft. Mm-hmm. But the idea that people have a portfolio of different roles or different jobs, do you think it'll keep moving in that direction?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Because most of the world that we work in and the people that we see and interact with are pretty much the traditional model of employee mm-hmm. company, and they seem to want that. Even I've talked to some friends who have been in a gig economy. Uh-huh. They seem to always truly be looking for that place they can go
uh-huh.
and be an employee and feel great about it. So
yeah.
I think that's, I don't know if it's going to grow a lot.
Yeah.
It'll be there, but I think most people want some stability uh-huh. and know that I can go to this place. It aligns with my values. I have great leadership. Mm-hmm. I love the people that I work with. My job is meaningful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super curious about it because I think it can be hard for certain personalities to split their attention between, right. say, three different jobs yeah. or companies. But I do think so much of that stability, it's still just that we're operating out of the old mindset of like, I got to get a stable mm-hmm. salary benefits package.
Right.
And it's interesting what you said about resource deficit because like our team is made up of people doing fractional, you mm-hmm. know, they're fractionally working with us and some other things.
Yeah.
And they find that really meaningful because they can kind of create more of the flexibility and
right.
life situation they want. But yeah, the struggle is, well, then what does it look like to have financial security yeah. and to know I have enough and right. insurance and all those pieces? That's the bigger struggle because the world isn't like
yeah.
built for that right now.
Now. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, the external world isn't built for that,
mm-hmm.
which makes it so hard to make those transitions. And it's the days are long gone when I work. It's like, put up with this, stay here this number yeah. of years, you get a pension and yeah. you'll be fine. And so those days are gone. But, and also I feel like the play, study, work, retire mm-hmm. mindset is obsolete as well.
Yeah.
Because you have a lot of folks who, companies need talent, but then all of our systems are designed, when you get a certain age, you should be thinking about retirement and pushing out.
Oh my
gosh.
A
lot of the folks really yeah. want to continue to work, but you know the system isn't built that way. And then you have yeah. younger people who want to get an MBA, but the 401k is designed for you to retire to access that money. Uh-huh. So I can't get it. It
yeah.
just doesn't make sense.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, well, this punctuates your point about talent deficit. We have incredibly talented people on our team who just don't fit what the bigger companies are looking for on your LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they probably wouldn't even get the job there, not because they don't have the talent, but because they don't fit that linear
right.
progression that sometimes even the automated system's looking for.
Yeah.
But yet they have this incredible value to bring to the table. It's just that I think that's why I have such a passion for generalists and creatives and mm-hmm. people who aren't, didn't have the linear path.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, someone like you has incredible like value to bring to the table, mm-hmm. but you don't pass the filter of, okay, did you go to this school and then have this job and this job and this job?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand that you were an athlete and then in sustainability and then in like, so you must not be valuable because I don't understand that.
Right. Yeah. I always had a trouble with a resume because the story wasn't easy for people to understand.
Yeah.
But I think what helped me is having someone on the inside of the organization working on my behalf to sort of help you get beyond the traditional submitting a resume.
Yeah.
It gets kicked out because certain things don't match. Yeah. I've been very fortunate, even in my existing role, because I'm a 7 on the Enneagram. It was like, I always fall within like the 5% of the population when you do these assessments. So I feel like sometimes I have 1 foot out and 1 foot in.
Uh-huh.
I'm always on the edge.
Yeah.
But I have a boss. I have an organization that respects that. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me a chance to kind of work the outside and bring the outside into the organization. So, yeah.
So the answer is become a chief innovation officer. So it's in your title to be weird.
I believe that it's going to become easier for people who aren't the logical fit to find a home in some of these organizations.
I believe that too.
Yeah.
It's so wild. We've been talking about these percentages lately because I think that's where a lot of my angst comes from. Mm-hmm. You always feel a little different.
Yeah.
Because statistically you are. Right. you are harder to like fit in the box. And things are changing. So it's becoming more valued to think creatively, to problem solve open-endedly, to innovate, connect dots,
right,
to see patterns. Like that's needed now. And to your point, like in the old way of work, that was just annoying and doesn't get the job done.
Why can't you just follow directions? just do what I say.
Damn task.
Why do you ask so many questions?
Yeah, exactly. Now we need that skill more than ever.
Yeah.
But it is funny, companies, I even feel it as a leader. I'm like, it's hard to know how to fit that in because it's still a world where I'm paying you for like your time input. So I want to make sure we're getting the most out of this.
Yeah.
Creativity is hard to measure.
The beauty of it, it comes together, it's magic because when I joined Great Place to Work, I'm thinking sustainability is a big part of this conversation. And somehow we needed to connect our work to that. Fast forward to today, I just had a call and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about ESG. We're talking about how Great Place to Work is a big part of it. So I think for those who are kind of creative or see things in a different way, it's frustrating, but you just have to kind of keep pushing those ideas and it makes a difference.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. So I probably need to ask this. So everyone's just dying to know, like what are you working on right now? Personally in your role, the company. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my role in the company, we've had this cohort of executives from some exemplary organizations who have been working together over the last 3 years. And really it's focused on diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. Because how do we truly crack the code? Because we've been saying the right things, we make incremental progress, but we need to move beyond that. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a moonshot thing. So we've had 11 companies, executives from those 11 companies over 3 years, doing experiments, trying new things to really crack the code. So we've been working on that. And so that work is evolving. It's going to continue. But I'm also currently working on, I think to be a thriving company in the future, you have to do good by society. You have to do good for the environment. And so we're building our work more within the framework of ESG. Mm. And I'm heavily involved in that. And we're in 170 different countries. Uh-huh. So that work is probably easier to implement in Europe than it is in the US right now.
Yeah.
Because that even ESG has a political charge. So
how would you this might be a hard question, but how would you characterize like with sustainability, with DEIB, what's the difference between how we're just like giving lip service now versus what it would look like to truly have those things be real?
That's a great question. So from DEIB, our focus in this cohort has been on equity and representation, equity and opportunity, equity and compensation, equity and well-being. Because we know those are challenges within all of those organizations. And so truly what gets measured gets done. And so how does it really show up? First, you need a shared aspiration at the very top of the organization that this is important. Mm-hmm. If that's not there, then it's pretty much lip service.
Yeah.
And so how are the leaders and executives behaving and what are they saying? What are their actions? And then from there, you have to have clear goals. And so I would say what's different? These companies, it isn't a bolt-on strategy, but it's integrated into how you do things.
Yeah.
So I'm not asking a leader to adopt to DEIB. I'm saying that to be a leader requires an inclusive set of behaviors. Uh-huh. That's the only way you can be a leader here.
That's woven into the fabric of how everything's done.
Yeah. So I think it's less bolted on, it's more integrated.
Hmm. Which I don't know. I would imagine that actually helps because that's less of a politically charged angle of it. And it's more of a, no, we're talking about like what's great for human beings and companies. Right. And
It's because it's going beyond the, if you're still having to create a business case for these things today, that doesn't say a lot. So yeah, you have, we are moving beyond that.
And then are you guys in working at all with, I know I've been hearing a lot since the UN kind of declared these numbers and percentages about, you know, the danger zones we're in with sustainability. Is this like, are you guys weaving into some of that work?
Very much so. Yeah. If you look at the Sustainable Development Goals that was developed, I don't know how many years ago, 17 of them, but we'll never reach those goals at our current pace. So I think there's also this recognition that maybe the problem isn't with the goals, but it's a problem. The problem rests with the people who are trying to do the work. So it's more leaders have to look inside of themselves and figure out who are they and how what impact are they having for the goals to be reached. And so we're doing a lot of leadership development, or like a lot of forecasting what leaders are going to need to be in the future. We're connecting that to the SDG conversation. Okay. And all the things that are happening in sustainability world.
Do you guys like coach them too? Or is that, are you more just providing insight and advice?
We provide insights, advice, and we consult or coach with a select few.
But that's so cool.
Yeah.
I mentioned a few people that you were coming on, and I think it is a shared, you know, Great Places to Work is really known for the list. And when I met you, I was excited that there's so much more going on than just the list.
Right.
But I think that, you know, like all brands, you kind of get known, pegged for one thing.
Yeah.
But there's so much you guys are doing broader than that.
That's good. They know us for the list, but most people think that's Fortune. They don't even know Great Place Works behind it. Yeah. So we're known for the list. We have like, our mission is to change the world, make it a better world by creating great places to work for all, for everyone. So that's our mission. And the way we do that is we collect data on the experience people are having. We use that data to help leaders make different decisions to create a better workplace culture. We also recognize those who are doing a really good job of that. And so it's kind of twofold. Research, recognition. We convene people, get them together to have the right conversations. And then we also do some advisory work with some companies.
Yeah. What does the structure of the company look like? Are there kind of different departments focusing on different pieces?
Yeah, we have different departments. We have people and culture. We have a lead gen team that sort of helps us generate, you know, leads for our organization. We have a consulting practice. We have a practice that oversees our global operations. We have finance. So all the typical functions you would have in a company.
Yeah.
We are a SaaS company. We made a transition a few years ago to become more of a SaaS company. So we have our own platform that we use to measure the employee experience.
Yeah.
And we have people that are selling subscriptions to that platform.
It's so cool. I think I mentioned that we had heard Michael speak at a conference a few years back.
Yeah.
And it was so good. We've used some of his quotes in our material sense. Yeah. And that's when I started becoming a fan, because I also didn't realize the breadth of what you guys do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't, when I joined, I'm like, I didn't know anything about Great Place to Work. But the first thing I noticed when I joined was like, this is crazy. We have so much data that we've collected for like over 30 years. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So we're doing a really good job today of using that data to drive change around the world.
Well, what have you personally been excited about recently?
Personally excited about. Outside of work, we have another grandkid that's coming.
Hey, so
I'm
congrats.
Really excited about that. Thanks. I'm also excited about, I love to read. I'm excited about, I'm trying to be the best person I can be, I would say. That's always a journey, but.
What kind of stuff do you read?
I don't really read much fiction, which I probably need to read more of that. Yeah. I'm reading a book. It's called There's No Hurry. In Light Years, There's No Hurry.
Huh.
It's written by a Belgium, I think it's a Belgium artist. But it's all about when astronauts go into space, and they started to leave the atmosphere, I think it's called the overview effect. So when they look down on Earth and they see Earth from that view, that vantage point, they change.
Yeah.
They're never the same. So they basically are saying, I went to the moon to discover the Earth.
Yeah.
So when they come back, they're like totally different people. They're giving, they're more involved in sustainability work. They're more involved in society. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading, that's one book that I'm reading, which I think is.
What's it called again?
In Light Years, There's No Hurry.
Okay.
I think it's the cosmic, I'll mess it up if I try to remember all of it. So I'm reading that. I'm going back to the artist way.
Yes. Know? Oh, yeah. Love that.
Yeah. I'm finally doing it all 12 weeks.
Okay.
Consistently. And there are a few other books that I'm reading.
Nice.
Yeah.
You got any side projects going on?
I've always had some side projects, and I continue to do some work. Just when I first started my career, I really didn't fit. I shouldn't have been where I was. But there's this one leader who's like, you know, he knew me from basketball. It's like, yeah, we're going to bring you on. But they probably need some people on the team. That's really why I was hired. But he's like, you really don't know this work, but we're going to rotate you. You're going to go through the company. You're going to learn all these different parts of the organization. Then we'll find a home for you. And I ended up finding a nice home. So I feel like he helped me realize that the skills that I was developing as an athlete transitions well into corporate, but I just didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And if he had thrown me into the HR realm, I would have never gotten through.
Yeah.
So fast forward, side projects is just kind of helping some athletes figure out, once you know you're not going to play professionally, how do I transition what I've learned into something else? So I'm doing a lot of work with, not a lot, but in some of my spare time, doing some work that way.
That's really interesting to me. We see that a lot in coaching where people, and there's other similar spheres, like coming out of a military life or being a teacher or a lawyer and then transitioning.
Yeah.
Or, you know, nonprofits or ministries. Like, there's so many skills that actually make you a great leader in a different context,
right?
But you don't realize it. It's back to the resume problem.
Yeah.
It doesn't line up very clearly.
Not at all. And so, it's like an inability to communicate what I can bring over here that people really don't understand your world and what you do. So it's a translation issue. Try to work through that.
Yeah. I'd imagine a lot of communication issue too. Like you have to be able to present yourself.
Yeah.
Be able to explain those things and those connections.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really cool.
If you talk to an executive, or even a CEO, they would say, based on what they spend their time on, I'm leading people, I'm leading a brand, and I'm managing finances. That's a big part of what is being done. If I think about an athlete, especially in the name, image, and likeness world.
I was going to say, now
they're managing
more than
a brand. Even if I'm interviewed on behalf of this team, I'm managing that brand. If I'm a captain, I'm leading people. I'm also, data is a big part of how sports is run now. So all those things I'm kind of doing in my own world. And I'm working in a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Yeah. And where team interaction isn't just a nice to have. It's like,
it's a must.
It's a must.
Yeah.
It has to work.
So cultural intelligence is a big part of.
I was thinking that about different military situations. Like, no, if you don't lead and communicate well, like, you're dead. So this is kind of, whereas in a corporate environment, it can be like, well, you can get by with just doing your job and not being great at teamwork or leadership.
Yeah.
I didn't think about the NIL angle though. That's interesting. Because it's true now, especially if you have to think about your persona online or social media, it is similar to a business where you have to all these different hats you have to think about,
right?
All these facets of the brand and the team and the product.
Yeah.
And it's like that's the part of school or lots of entry level jobs that you don't have to do the different hats.
Yeah. You talk to a Division I football player and all the different scenarios I have to understand. Strategy that does a part of it. It's amazing.
Yeah. I always thought that when I started a business, like, oh, I have to put on this finance hat every day. And in a lot of corporate jobs, it's like, I never had to think about money or sales or marketing or all the pieces of that.
Yeah.
Huh.
So I'm doing that. I have a few professors that I've got to know who are helping in the mapping of the taxonomy around all this. And mm-hmm. so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
What I love about this conversation is Tony is somebody who is thinking about leadership and workplace as well as life and life design. And that's the intersection that I sit at and that I love talking about, because I think work should facilitate the life we want and life should also have meaningful work. And so I want to almost divide it into those two categories for you. Like, how can you have what can you take away from this conversation in the like work, specific work and leadership bucket, as well as the life and the life work balance bucket? And so I think for leaders, one of the takeaways here is there is an old way of doing things. And I think that started melting away many years ago. But what I've observed is the pandemic and a lot of the things surrounding that kind of put the foot on the gas pedal and made us pay attention to those changes and forced us in some ways, like hybrid work is the obvious one. That was already something happening pre-pandemic. And then COVID just helped us accelerate that change and forced us to have to pay attention or make changes or rethink things. So as a leader, it's just helpful to sit down and think about like what are some of the things I'm doing or approaches or mindsets that are the old way versus the new way, and questioning things in that sense. It can be easy to get stuck and feeling like I have to question everything and rethink everything. And so I just want to propose a very free and gracious space of, no, you can question what's an old way and what's a new way without needing to ditch everything and rethink everything. And then in terms of work and its intersection with life, work has changed. He now works with people around the entire globe and every day can have meetings with people in various countries and at various time zones. And so again, it forced this rethinking of his schedule, like the traditional 9-to-5 at a desk type of thing. It's not that it doesn't work for him anymore. It's that it's not actually true anymore. Like, it's not actually how the world works anymore. So he rethought that and reinvented it and is testing new things. And I love how he has that intentionality of, okay, well, what are some things I love? And for him, it's like sports and working out and some of these other things that he's placing in his day in a very kind of untraditional way, but also having really meaningful work and reshaping what that looks like. So again, it's just questioning what are some of the old ways that can go and some of the new ways that I want to bring in. And that gets me to the conversation that I just had this morning with a coaching client who is at this intersection, this kind of crossroads in career and thinking about what's next. And like so many people, considering maybe starting her own thing, but also considering some jobs and then also trying to deal with the practicalities of real life and bills to pay and all of this. And she did a very, very typical thing. And she's like, okay, but which one should I do, this or that? And what I encourage her to think about is the and. What if you pursued that job where she actually has an opportunity that's kind of a 1099, like a fractional thing, that would provide this steady income while also pursuing and continuing to build out some of her plans on her own business ventures? And that's like the perfect combo where she has the space to do both, but it frees her up from the urgency of needing the job, needing income right now. And so I think for anyone in a transition point, it's really similar. But my takeaway is just to consider like what are some of the things that are the old way versus new ways I want to bring in.